This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off-limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this. All of My Mochi's fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream, are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings, or the midnight munchies. Yeah. You know who you are, with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 593. It's a partially hostful intro because Matt Myra happened to be in my dressing room here in New York. He's exhausted.
Yep.
He's been working a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's going to say.
Well, I'm going to say it was really fun talking to Tom Bergeron about Massachusetts.
You're not even a loose cannon. You're like a tired cannon right now.
No, a tired cannon. It wasn't even on this episode.
No. Nope. Now you are, technically.
Theoretically, yeah. I think I should just show up in the intros from now on.
No, I think
people
should.
People seem to like listening to
you. You should start
intros.
Showing up on the shows.
Well, you know how it is with the schedule. I've been in New York all week.
Hey, fuck you, man. More hostfuls or I'm walking.
So this episode with Tom Bergeron,
mm-hmm.
did you feel at all like, oh, my voice isn't as good as his?
His voice is great.
Yeah, he's got a radio voice.
He has an amazing voice and a strong presence. And he's, first of all, Dancing with the Stars is still on, I believe. And then also the 25th anniversary of America's Funniest Home Videos. And this is going to be Tom's last season.
Whoa.
Oh, should I take it over?
Yeah, probably.
I should probably host that show.
I feel like
show,
you need something to do on Saturdays.
Between noon and between like 1 o'clock and 4 p.m.
Yeah,
we could sandwich
like
it in there.
That's your thing you need to do.
We could bang out like a month's worth of shows in that time.
I mean, we don't technically tape at midnight on Fridays.
Yeah.
You could do 2 AFVs a week.
That's right.
You go in, record some funny voiceover.
And then as soon as they make that super-powered underground train that goes from LA to New York, I can just get around the country easily.
Now, I haven't watched America's Funniest Video in a little while. A very funny show, and I do, like, when I'm flipping, I stop on it. But I haven't stopped on it long enough to know, do they still vote in the audience? Do they pull a thing out of the back of the chair and hit the button?
They'd have to.
But is there still like a thing that's clunky and wired and they hit a 1, 2, or 3?
This is why I would recommend that you watch Tom Bergeron's final season of America's Funniest Home Videos.
Podcast too. That's not gonna happen.
We don't cover that.
Yeah.
Spoiler
alert.
Oh,
you don't cover that?
No.
Guys, turn it off.
No, Matt, stop it!
And guys, keep listening.
It's a good save. God damn it. Get some rest.
Touche.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I don't know if you will remember this. The first time we met, do you know we've met before?
I'm assuming that you're not lying to me now.
Okay, good. In the year 2000,
at the dawn of the 21st century,
I was on Hollywood Squares.
Oh, okay. All right. I was too in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You were hosting.
Yeah.
And it was really fun because I got to be on with Martin Mull and Terry Garr,
right,
and Richard Kind and just all these really great,
really great
funny
people. Yeah.
People. And I didn't really know much about you at the time, but I remember between takes of something, because we shot 5 shows in a
That's
day.
That's right, yeah.
On a Saturday, it was like 5 shows.
Yeah.
And
And I'll never forget this. It was the first time I was like, oh, Tom Bergeron's really funny. Because something, I just didn't know you before. And right, something happened and you said, nobody ever expects the Inquisition. And I'm like, he just referenced Python.
Right, right.
Tom must be a comedy guy to a degree.
Thanks. It was, that was an incredible show to do. Because on those occasions, and it happens when you're not really 100% into it,
mm-hmm.
you know, or whatever, something in your personal life or whatever. Instead of worrying about it, I would just allow myself to be a fan
yep.
of the nine of them. And invariably that would like prime the pump. And I'd be, you know, a half a show or two shows in, and suddenly I was fine because it just was too good to pass up. You had incredible people in there. When Robin Williams passed away, I put up on Twitter one of his appearances with Whoopi and Billy Crystal
mm-hmm.
and they were doing comic relief then. And it was just a really emotional, in light of what happened, episode, because you saw him sort of in his prime.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, I love doing that show.
Where did you start?
In my hometown when I was 17, in radio. I was in high school and a teacher of public speaking, was a part-time newsman in the local radio station, and I put on my brown nose, and I got to know him really well.
Did you have a radio name? This is Tornado Town.
No, I didn't. No.
You can use Tornado Town if you want.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. No one at the Weather Channel has that?
I don't think so. Okay. They should. Well, yeah. we did have like Johnny Mountain. It was like everyone.
Oh, those, and you got to have that voice when you got to do the guy to. Oh, there was one time I was doing a morning show at WBZ in Boston, and the sports guy, who was also the play-by-play guy for the Patriots on radio, was late. And I guess he just figured we'd ignore it. But I figured, well, there's supposed to be sports on. So I turned into Biff Bergeron with sports because in my mind, a lot of sports guys have this kind of exaggerated way of talking. And, you know, the Celtics are looking good this season. You know, he came in. He was fucking furious.
Hey, Tab, I just want you to know that's not how we all talk.
No, we don't talk like that.
You're doing it right now.
I'm not doing it now.
That's right. No.
So you started in radio.
Yeah.
And then where did you start making the shift over to television?
It, kind of by accident. I was doing a radio show in New Hampshire a couple of years later in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, a place I still go back to and love. And some people in Boston TV were listening to that radio show. And I got called to audition for some shows in Boston. And I ended up hosting a kid show, which, do you remember that show, Evening Magazine, PM Magazine?
PM Magazine, was
that
right? Yeah, of course.
It was like that, only it was aimed at kids, like 6 through 12.
Yeah.
And so I went down and auditioned, and I got that, and I was working part-time in TV and radio in New Hampshire, and then one thing led to another. I ended up doing more and more in television in Boston. Can I just see this?
Please.
I have a text from my stranded publicist, because she's at the gate now.
Stranded on island. Send food. Remember, Kyle. Tag, run.
She's afraid I'll go rogue.
Oh my God! That means you have like 10 minutes to go rogue.
Boom, 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 boom.
What's gonna happen? What's rogue Tom? What's rogue Bergeron?
You've had to deal with. I mean, Alejandra's wonderful.
Yeah.
She's long since given up hoping that I'll, you know. But you've had that publicist thing in the back of the room where they go.
Well, I always kind of keep an eye on, and then when someone will start to stray into an area where it just, you can see the shifting.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
And then it's like, okay, so I'm sure there's an email coming.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, I mean, our show is not, this is not really like a super controversial, like, people don't. It's a pretty friendly. So
oh,
we haven't
damn,
had.
I was really hoping to stir it up.
No, but. I would like you to stir it up. I'm saying we need you to add some. We need you to add some black coffee to this and and take it up a couple notches.
All right. Well, I'll get rid of this first. I came prepared.
Tom, I don't think doing heroin right now during the show is going to help.
Well, I just thought it's a podcast. Who would see it?
Ooh, damn. Here, let me tie that off.
All right, thanks.
So did you ever, one's
free. Did you back up the van?
Did you ever do sketch comedy, improv, anything?
Yeah,
like
improv. Of course, radio is largely improv, depending on the format. And
right.
It was for me in the years I did it. And then I did, oddly enough, I was a mime as well.
A radio mime?
And what I'm going to do now on the podcast for Chris, and you just stare at your computer speakers, if you would. This is a little bit of mime, just to prove I'm not, you know, bullshit.
Okay. Tom's like trapped in a box. I don't know if there's any
leaning on thin air.
Okay, but you're talking.
Oh,
now,
I'm talking.
So,
well,
yeah,
that's right. I'm doing mime play by play. It's sort of
mime play by play.
That's right. That's right.
Mimes don't talk like that.
Yeah, they do.
So for a time, I was doing a morning radio show, and then I was working with the theater company at night, so doing like Marcel Marceau Jr. You know. So a buddy of mine said, "It's weird because when we hear you, we can't see you, and when we see you, we can't hear you."
Oh yeah, you flipped it.
Yeah, it's very yin, very yang.
So when you started doing television, did you ever want to do? Did you ever want to be an actor, or was it pretty? Did you really just?
I like working live.
Yeah,
and so I did some you know stage stuff like regional theater things, but I always liked more of an improvisational setting. I tried doing stand up comedy for a time.
Yep.
But I never had a real voice, a sort of a comedic voice that to filter it through. And I would end up trying to do improv and sketch comedy for, you know, drunks at 2 a.m.
What was
open
your filthiest joke in your set? Do you remember?
No, I don't. I didn't really have a filthy joke, but I did one joke I was proud of. I actually did some stints at the Magic Townhouse in Manhattan. I don't even know if it exists anymore. And I was the only non-magician on the bill. you're on at like 2 a.m. or something like that. And so all these magicians would perform, and then I'd get up and I'd say, "And now my trick is to make you disappear."
And then slowly.
And then they would. They would go. Then I'd go through my act and
then
they'd get up.
Once it was empty, you'd go, ta-da.
Ta-da. That's right. Nothing up my sleeve. Wow. He did exactly what he said he was going to do.
I mean, that's the best you can hope for.
Yeah.
If you're doing magic.
Right.
But I personally, not that this is about me, but it's just fun to have another host on.
Sure.
Because I feel like I'm so curious to hear about, you know, like how you view it and what's exciting to like acting to me was something I gave up on a long time ago. So I'm like, I just wasn't really that passionate about it.
Yeah, I'm not either.
I love that the hosting stuff is in the moment. You get to be yourself and it's fairly, the turnover rate's really high. Like you don't have time to think about it. You
right.
do it, it's done.
Right.
You know, you're not on a set having to shoot the same thing for 2 weeks.
Exactly.
It's like, hey, you know, and your show's live and you get
dancing
it and it's
is
over with and then that's it.
Hollywood Squares is a good example because, as you know, we would do the 5 in a day, and there was one particular day that the show, remember the nanny?
Yes.
Fran Drescher show? So they were going to shoot a scene on Hollywood Squares where her husband character, I guess he was in the theater or something, he was going to be one of the squares, and she was ovulating, and they had to, you know, make a baby.
Of course.
So
I have 100.
So then where did you bury those bodies?
So, well, here's the thing. Oh, right. Yes, that's right.
Oh, no. Don't worry about it.
I was saying, Alejandra's on her way. I have to go rogue now before you.
Yeah.
So we do our 5 shows, and if you recall, we did them like they were live, boom, 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 one after another, between 10 and like 4:30, and we had a one-hour break for a meal and all that. Then the people from the sitcom come in, and it took that long again
to shoot a scene.
So the idea of waiting and doing another, oh, we've got to move the lights, we've got to do this, I like. You know, Dancing with the Stars is great because I know exactly when it's going to start and exactly when I'll be at the bar over at the Grove.
It's actually on the schedule.
Yeah, it's on the schedule. Yeah.
I mean, it Were you a fan of game shows when you were growing up?
Certain ones, like the original Hollywood Squares.
Original Hollywood
Paul
Squares.
Paul Rand and Peter Marshall. Password
was great.
Alan Ludden.
Yep.
There were shows like, do you remember Art Linkletter?
Of course.
And he had Art Linkletter's House Party was on. That was the name of the show. You'd come home from school. I know, it's true. Art Linkletter's House Party. It was no party.
No.
But
please don't sit on the plastic. Yeah. We've put the furniture in plastic for this house party.
I actually, my wife's parents, who now passed away, lived next to some people in Florida who did that. Their entire house was just sealed, vacuum sealed in plastic. And it was the weirdest thing to go over there and try to make an evening of it if they didn't. We'd be visiting.
Listen, it's fine if it's horribly uncomfortable and noisy when you shift around and weird, as long as the furniture looks exactly the same as when you bought it. Is ultimately
Then of course it's in Florida and it's hot and humid, so you make those inadvertent farting sounds when you're trying to stand up from the suction of the plastic on your buttocks.
So just farting.
It was a lot of actual farting, but I used to blame the
plastic. I love game shows.
That was from them. They were at an age where they didn't care.
These plastic covers are fart covers.
Yeah, that's right.
I loved game shows when I was growing up. Yeah. For some reason, I was just obsessed. I loved like Joker's Wild and,
mm-hmm.
And
Jack Barry, right?
Jack Barry.
And
Jack
he wasn't Barry. He involved in the scandals?
Yeah,
in the
21.
50s, right? Yeah.
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 And then Kyle. What was the show we used to do with Pardo live?
Oh, Match Game.
Oh, with Gene Rayburn.
Match Game is really this kind of the spirit of what this show I'm doing for Comedy Central is, which is basically just like funny people just kind of being loose and fucking around.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know.
But Match Game was great. The Gene Rayburn, like Match Game 73, he looked stewed all the time.
They all looked toasted.
He looked absolutely shit-faced. And Paul Lynde didn't do – well, Paul Lynde was probably hammered on Hollywood Squares.
On Hollywood Squares.
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
But Gene Rayburn had this kind of weird microphone that looked like it was some sort of proctology instrument.
Yeah.
And it's long, thin, and he would kind of stagger over to Brett Summers and Charles Nelson Reilly and
Richard Dawson
and leer at these poor young women contestants. And just, it was all very, very creepy and yet compelling.
Hey,
at the same
ever
time.
Had a microphone inside you? What?
That's right. That's right. You ever feel a polyester lapel this wide, sweetheart?
I'm Rayburn. I can crush you.
Yeah.
Gene, please.
Gene, it's right.
That's how they know that was the last show of the day.
That's right.
Why there was Match Game 73. They had to shut it down. Then 76.
Yeah, that's how we knew what year it was. It was mostly for Gene.
Those were really the time when you could just get plowed on television.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone sort of, I think the audience kind of understood that it was almost kind of charming.
Well, it's funny, too, because I'm shooting my final season of America's Funniest Videos, and one of the producers, who's an absolute sweetheart, came to my dressing room in the first taping. She said, oh, look in your fridge. I said, what? And I opened the fridge, and there were like two bottles of booze in there. She said, I thought, you know, it's your last season. You might want to have a little. I said, no, the last show I will, but I don't want to be toasted the whole last season.
But what if like drunk Tom Bergeron on the show, like all of a sudden the show gets even bigger?
Well, that's all right. Then you want to go out on top.
You want to go out on top?
Yeah, while you're still on your original liver.
Did you see Bergeron took his shirt off on the show last night?
Yeah.
It was crazy.
So that's what love handles look like. But the thing is, I would get on vodka, I would just get Cosby drunk.
Then we got a video of a puppy, and the puppy is going to hump the leg of a socialite. That's wonderful.
You're missing a huge opportunity. You understand?
I mean, I know now tequila would be like,
yeah, I'll get you my pretties.
But see, this is the thing. Now, you need to be focused on Dancing with the Stars. But funniest videos, you could totally fuck around.
Well, and I do a bit because it's on tape and they edit you know, they can edit around me, which they'll be doing a lot of next season.
I mean, you've helmed like some real legacy shows on television. It's exciting. It's fun.
It is fun. It is fun. I mean, Squares, I think, are revived. Look, there'll never be another Squares like the original because that was sort of an iconic game show.
Yeah.
But we did a really fine revival of it, I thought, for 6 years. And Videos has been wonderful. I call that show the annuity. And Dancing with the Stars is a show that when it was first proposed to me, I'm sure as most people thought, a celebrity ballroom competition, you went, yeah, right.
Exactly. You know, like, who would watch that?
Yeah.
It turns out everyone would watch that.
Yeah, so it's been knock wood or whatever this desk is made of.
We're not 100%
sure. Okay, I'm not either.
What do you think is the key to, and I'm also asking this for myself, what do you think is the key to longevity? Like, how have you managed to not just stay in the game, but just like stay on top of the game for so long?
I could give you the stock answer that I have incriminating pictures of Disney executives, but but that's not true, unfortunately. It's a lot of luck, I think, and just for me, it was just having fun with it, getting into the whole idea of how do I approach things as a host is okay. I'll respect the format up to a point,
mm-hmm.
and then see what kind of mayhem I can make within those boundaries. So I'm like with Dancing with the Stars, the British show, which is still on the air in England, Strictly Come Dancing, which is sort of the mothership of all the Dancing with the Stars shows around the world. They already had set the template, which I loved, which is it's kind of a kitschy show. It's a bit of a throwback to old style variety, and they had fun with it. And so that gave me the idea, if I do this, I can play around with aspects of it. I can make fun of the costumes or the silly trophy or the spray tanning. Always very protective of the couples.
Of course.
And what they do, the effort they put out, but I'll go at the judges and, you know, I'll wink. Fallon put together a bunch of clips of me giving the audience a hard time for continuing to clap to the music, which had stopped, you know, and we'd come back from a break, the band would be playing, they'd be clapping to the music, the band would stop, they'd keep clapping to the music, and it would break me up. And I didn't realize how many times I was going, you can stop clapping.
See, they needed your leadership.
Right,
they're just,
right.
Everyone in the audience is, the momentum is moving. They don't know, like, they just need one person to be
can't,
like.
It's right. It's like that old Robert Klein thing, I can't stop my leg, you know.
I think that'd be a really funny point in the show for you to just get, like, really joke mad at people.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, stop it!
Well, that's what...
Stop it!
Well, when they put them all together, and that's what Fallon was doing. He's going, Tom Bergeron hates clapping.
What are some of the shows... Oh, we should talk about failed pilots. Do you have some good failed pilots?
There was they kind of disappear into my already.
I'm sure I have way worse ones.
What did I do? There was one I did for Fox. Well, I certainly had failed shows. We did a wonderful cable show when FX first launched called Breakfast Time, which was based on The Big Breakfast in England.
Oh, right.
And it was in a loft apartment in the Flatiron District in New York, and then. An executive at Fox who moved on to Paramount wanted to bring it to the Fox network, and he greenlit it. Then he left, and then we were somebody else's project, and that was a disaster. That mm-hmm. was like we were on for a little less than half a year.
Oh, man.
Or half a season, I think. But I met Whoopi there, so that led to Hollywood Squares. So to your original question, a lot of it is just the happenstance of if you're working at one job and you're making connections, then things can happen. Meeting Whoopi, the two of us hitting it off, led to a year or so later me being offered the hosting gig at Hollywood Squares.
But then you also it's all the stuff that you got to remember, like, oh yeah, show up on time and be nice to people because you will not keep working if it's like, oh yeah, he's kind of rough.
Well, seriously, this is we were talking before we started chatting on mic. The hosting thing is like the cushiest gig in the whole show.
It's really hard. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that show. Yeah, of course. But you know, I Hollywood Squares was like that. I would walk in the morning at 10 o'clock, and, you know, there'd be bagels and breakfast food out. We'd all high-five each other, and we'd start shooting at 11. Like, you know, we were out at 4:30. Bye-bye. That's it. Here's where you send the check.
Right.
You know, meanwhile, Dancing with the Stars, there, as we sit here kibitzing, there are people, you know, two blocks away that are killing themselves trying to learn a dance number, and the producers are putting on these, you know, these major productions together, and I get to stroll in on show day and be a wise ass, you know.
That Dancing with the Stars actually does kind of scare the shit out of me in terms of, that's one thing I don't think I would. If they ever said, "Hey, do you want to do this?" I'd be like, "No,
why? Why not?
Yeah, I just don't.
Why not?
I just don't feel like it.
I don't feel like it. You're turning it into a G. Robinson.
I'm not gonna do it. See, I'm not gonna dance on your show, Tom. I'm not gonna take my gams out for people.
Seriously, why would you not?
I don't know. Just the idea of it really scares the shit out of me, and I think it's probably too much of the comic gene. Is having to do something and be really earnest about it and also try really, like, it's like people that you have to try. It's a lot. I mean, I'm not afraid of work. I work all hours of the day, but there's just something about it where, you know, I could tell jokes in front of a million people and not be nervous about it. But that show, just the technical aspect of having to learn something in just a couple of days and be on point with another person.
Right.
And where you're literally, I would imagine the people that go on that show have the kinds of stress dreams leading up to the performance. It's just like, today's the big assembly in school and I'm not wearing pants. Like those types of stress dreams.
Or they're not wearing pants and the spray tan machine knows exactly where to shoot it.
And then they're going to get judged afterwards.
That's right,
I mean, it is like that kind of, you know, it's test day, you know, that
but that's why I say the host role in that kind of environment is the easiest.
Yeah.
Because I get to, you know, I get to kind of play with and surf off all of that just stew pot of emotion that they bring to it.
Right.
And again, I know that I'm going to be usually like, I'll tease some of the pros that I've known for years. But the celebrities who come in, you know, new bus pulls up every season. And, you know, I tend to be a lot more protective of them because it is hard. But for me, it's just, I love it. I love going on a live show and just not knowing what's going to happen.
Who's been really amazing?
Faint or whatever.
Who's been really amazing? Who has surprised you the most on that show?
Jerry Springer. Seriously. Because I thought when they booked Jerry Springer some seasons ago, I thought, oh, really? Really? Because all I knew was the talk show and the screaming and fighting and all that. And he's a mensch. He's an absolute sweetheart of a guy. And he wanted to learn how to do a waltz, I think, so he could dance at his daughter's wedding. And he was like, I mean, it was all just, and he was funny and warm and self-deprecating. And there's a lot of that where you think you know a person and then they come in to that environment, as peculiar as it is, and you just get to see a different side of them.
Which also is kind of, watching the Jerry Springer show, I mean, I guess, yeah, he is a host of a show, I suppose, like that, he's hosting that show, but there is, you know, at some point, do you ever feel like, oh, I want to do something that's even more of just me and not within this structure? I mean, as much as you can sort of...
Yeah, I suppose. I get that. Where you're not servicing a format per se, but you've got a bit more...
We're friendly traffic... Like, when people ask me about hosting, I always say, well, it's like you're a friendly traffic cop.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to keep it moving. Yeah. And then where you can, you sort of get to inject your personality, but you don't want to get in the way of the thing.
Right.
So you just have to calibrate that balance, and that just takes, you just have to do it a shit ton before you can figure that out.
Yeah.
But I find that when you're a guest on a show or when you can just go do something that it's so like Conan was on Talking Dead the other night, and I was like, how do you like the tables turn? And he was like, it's great.
Yeah.
Because there's no responsibility. He can just be funny.
Right. You don't have to worry about, is this guest dying, or you know, do we? What are we going to do to set up the next break? Or, all that's completely off the table.
Yeah,
it's really like I don't care if this show's dying right now because I'm a guest. It's not my problem. It's really not my problem.
What are you saying, Tom? Look, I'm not saying it's dying, but
this may never actually get out there.
I'm just saying it doesn't matter if it is. But do you? Is there anything else that you like? What other aspects of your creative fulfillment do you think you would want to explore?
You know, part of me thinks I wouldn't mind getting back into like a radio-esque kind of setting.
Yep.
Again, because that was bring the whole career full circle. But technology now with podcasts and such, it's just a whole different way of looking at it and approaching it. So that has some appeal.
Yeah.
I don't know about hosting any more TV shows. I'm not closed to it, but at the same point, I don't see anything that really lights a fire in my gut.
Do you feel like you need to, are you good with, I'm going to take a guess. I think you're probably pretty good with respecting your schedule and resting when you rest.
Yeah. I'm a TM meditator. I have been for years. I'm a gym rat and all that stuff. Yeah. So I'm pretty.
Tell me about the meditation.
Meditation started years ago because mostly of my temper, which is pretty much in check. So it works.
Yeah.
That's a daily thing once or twice a day. And I love it.
Is it more about, mindfulness or breathing or just getting to a point where there's nothing in your head?
I've been doing it for over 30 years and there's never a point where there's nothing in my head.
Right.
And I think that's what dissuades a lot of people from taking up the, and again, whether it's TM or it's any other form, it's all branding really.
Right.
The core discipline is the same. You're focusing on something. And in my case, it's a Sanskrit mantra that somebody gave me, which was selected especially for me.
Hey.
You know, except it's, you know, whatever. Okay, fine.
Right.
But that's what I use. And it's all about being present. It's about, particularly in a work setting, you go on a live stage, no second take, it's really in your own best interest to be in that moment, not to let your mind wander and such. But in the actual practice of meditation, thoughts come in all the time. The trick is not to worry about it. If you're aware of it, then you come back to whatever your focal point is, be it your breath or a word or a mantra, whatever, and just don't be judgmental about it. Just acknowledge it and move on. You know, I've said to people who've asked me about it, think of it as styrofoam just bobbing on the top of a river. Those are your thoughts. They're not good. They're not bad. They just are.
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought about it in terms of judgment because ultimately, I think I would guess judgment is probably the way that our brain tries to control and sort.
Mm-hmm.
It's like once you judge something, then you're sort of like,
that's right.
I'm taking ownership over this thing, and now I've sorted it. And so we try to do that for everything.
And in the case of people trying to learn to build that meditative muscle, they tend to sabotage themselves. I can't do it because there are thoughts in my head, and it's just failing, and it's just frustrating, and all that. Instead of saying, the thoughts are okay, fine, just move them along.
Yeah.
Come back, you know. Some days, like I meditated before I came in here and I almost fell asleep in the car. That's fine. Whatever. Each time you sit is different, you know. And it's just, you kind of go with it.
So it's, just with your publicist here, it's probably good to point out that you probably started doing this 30 years ago. Was this after you murdered a man with your bare hands and they said, well, you should probably meditate?
It wasn't just a man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a busload of relief workers.
Yeah, we'll edit all this out.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay,
yeah,
don't
never know.
It all in. Just
leave
all this in. Okay,
yeah. And the statute of limitations is so... Well, I guess there's none for murder.
I mean, damn it,
son of a bitch.
I'm sorry, Alejandra. You'll visit me in prison, right?
So, do you think... Why this idea about moving Dancing with the Stars to San Quentin? Do you think maybe?
Yeah. It gives... There'll be all kinds of different dances there.
I mean, So you were kind of a hothead when you were younger?
Yeah. There were a few apartment walls that when I moved out, I put posters over the holes that I punched in them. Yeah. I was never. It was usually at stuff. It wasn't as at people.
Yeah.
It would be more directed at myself or at inanimate objects. But yeah, I could go off.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I tend to get more upset at. I think I'm good with big things. I can handle. Mm-hmm. I just get mad at like. It's the reception on this phone.
There's an old saying that I'll now butcher, but it's not the big things that cause a nervous breakdown. It's the shoelace that snaps when there's no time.
Oh shit, you know? That's good.
That's what does it.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
And so, what were you like growing up?
Always interested in broadcasting and a real lover of the silent film comedies and physical comedy.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that was what really got me interested in doing the modern day equivalent, which was mime before, you know, before we became the type of people who just annoyed you in public parks. But one of the great gifts of my career was then to become friends with Carl Reiner and through him, Dick Van Dyke, and to sit and be able to talk to them about the stuff they created. And Van Dyke, you know, arguably was a man out of time. I mean, they did a movie together called The Comic, which was about Billy Bright, a silent film comedian. And Van Dyke was, you know, he's so brilliant at it. And so that was always something growing up, both the idea of broadcasting or performing on stage, but interestingly, not acting so much, just more of a free form kind of thing.
You must have. I've had a couple of those moments with people where you meet them and you're sitting across the table from them, and then you kind of like are like, "Holy shit!" And then you realize it must have been the same way with Dick Van Dyke. What did you learn from him, or what? How do you mine him for information without him feeling like he's under a microscope?
Well, we had this wonderful lunch in Malibu about a year ago with his wife. It was just the three of us, and it turned into like a 2.5 hour. Lunch, and I basically, because I knew most everything about his career, and he was wonderful about talking about it. You know, just every from the days of the Van Dyke show with Carl Reiner to they did a new Dick Van Dyke show that didn't quite click the same way to movies to, you know, just he's great about kidding his Cockney accent from Mary Poppins, but a lot of it was about. Just how a career is putting one foot in front of the other, that it looks cohesive in hindsight. You can look at sort of the tapestry of something, and go, oh, well, that this all makes sense, or that led to that, led to that. But in the moment when you're doing it, when you're just trying to make a living and support a family and get a gig and get the next gig, and it doesn't always have a clear direction to it. It's just... There's a lot of lucky happenstance.
There is, and it almost, the business really does condition you to, it's almost bad, actually, I think. It just conditions you to never get too excited about anything.
Right, that's right.
Which sucks, because you should be able to appreciate the fruits of your accomplishments, but just in the same way that you go, I say to people, like, you know, if you're in a down period, like, don't take that too seriously. You almost can't take the up periods seriously either.
That's right, yeah. We live in Connecticut and out here and split the year when I'm not shooting out here. And we live next door to two lawyers in Connecticut. And I remember one time we were all to dinner together and they said, and I think this was after I had the Fox spinoff of the cable show had been, you know, canceled and... I was in line to do Good Morning America, but that didn't pan out. And, you know, but things were still, you know, checks were still coming in, and, you know. But they said, I can't imagine how you can live like that. It's just, and I'm thinking as, you know, I'm fond of them, but I can't imagine living like that. You know, it just.
Going to a desk every day with a stack of papers that you have to go through.
Right. And litigious assholes every day. You know, I'd much rather take my chances doing this.
Yeah. I mean, because it. You know, the good when it's good,
right.
We're constantly challenged by new experiences and we get a new, you know, like a whole new, you kind of get to start over.
And you get to, I had a great conversation with Henry Winkler about that very thing when he and Michael Levitt took over as the executive producers of Hollywood Squares in its last 2 years. And Henry and I did a media tour, one city every day, and you know, the junket type thing. and we were at Penn Station waiting to get on a train. And I was saying, you know, when you were Fonzie, you were like all four Beatles in one person. I mean, that was like incredible. And he said, right. And he said, I knew that everybody has peaks and valleys to their careers, but when it was happening, he said, I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll be that anomaly. It'll be peak to peak. There won't be a valley. And then, of course, there was.
Yeah.
And what he did, and what anybody who has, I think, a healthy approach towards any career, you learn to diversify. You learn, okay, if Fonzie is lightning in a bottle, what can I now do? Well, he became a producer and a director and a writer. He has a successful, you know, series of children's books. I mean, he does all kinds of stuff. And people, William Shatner is another person who's become a friend, and he's like another poster guy. 83 is not a poster boy anymore, but he certainly acts like it. But he's, what a career he's had.
Yeah.
You know, and he says he's like a good improv performer. He says yes to everything. You know, he really does. And he's been a real, as Carl Reiner has been, a real good person for me to get to know at this point in my career.
You have to diversify. And, yeah. And I always, just from working on a lot of different things, and people are like, why do you work on so many different things? Like, because I don't know, you know, like, I don't want to have so many eggs in one basket. It's too many times have I put all my emotional energy or all my financial hopes into one thing, and then, you know.
This is the first time in my career that I've deliberately said, in the case of videos, this is my last season. I'm choosing to wrap it up here. The show will no doubt continue.
Are you asking me to take over for you?
You can, is if that you
what
want.
You, is that what
I'm
you
giving
want?
You this opportunity.
Okay.
My young Padawan.
I'm a Padawan. Oh, the Chris, dark side.
Chris, I am your father.
What? I'm actually okay with that.
Okay.
Yeah, you seem like a good guy.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, it's not weird.
Apart from the murdering the busload of relief workers.
You know what? They had it. They shouldn't have been there in the first place.
You know what? And they were getting a little pushy.
Seriously. Yeah, so pretentious. Yeah. We are helping people.
They had pamphlets and stuff.
You know, they had it coming.
That's right.
I'm glad you flipped that bus over with your hands.
My bare hands.
Your bare hands.
Lucky there was a ravine nearby.
Wait, time. Stop. Meditate. You got to meditate now.
Oh, right. Fuck it. There they go again.
Fuck it. The Tom Bergeron ohm fuck it method.
Ohm
fuck it.
There's no place like ohm. That should be my book on meditation. Hello, there's no place like ohm.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So you made the conscious decision.
Yeah, this is the first time, instead of doing the multiple gigs, I'm saying, okay, I'm going to stop this one and just see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And if no real clear thing, that's good. That's good too, you know, because there's something in that that I'm kind of curious about.
You should do a podcast. I think honestly, I think you'd love it.
Yeah, I think I would too. Actually,
just having conversations with people that you like about interesting things.
Because I was asking before you got here, I was asking your gang here. I said, so do you do this every week? They said, well, you know, sometimes we do. Like we bank a whole bunch of them, and mm-hmm. we don't even send them out for a few months. And really.
Yeah, you could.
I get.
You could. You know, if you did a weekly show, the only thing you have to do, the thing you have to make sure is that you know you're making a deal with your audience.
Yes.
And so you're making this emotional contract, and they just want to know that you will hold up your end of the bargain.
Right.
So whatever your period of your release schedule is, just stick to it.
Sure.
So it's like if you tell them it'll be once a month, and you know, then they know that's the agreement. If you tell them once a week, just you know. Be consistent, and that's all you really have to do. And then beyond that, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah,
you'd love it.
Yeah, I'm sold. I'm good. Now, if you emotionally let them down, though, how angry can they get? Have they turned on you in the past?
Have you been on the internet?
The interwebs?
The interwebs.
Yeah.
It can be like...
They can get a little snarky.
It can be like walking through Mordor.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think ultimately, as long as, you know... I mean, we're not, and we could actually even be more consistent with our show. Like, we could post at the same exact time of day every time, and we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my fault because, you know, Katie's always ready to post, and it's my schedule. It's like, I didn't have time to record the intro last night. I'll do it in the morning.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, like, if a podcast hasn't posted by, like, 1 in the afternoon, people are like, what the fuck's up, bro? But you know that it's because they care about what you're doing, and so you can't, you know,
that's true.
Like,
yeah,
hey, get the leave me alone, yeah, man.
I've got a tough life.
Yeah, come on, it's real hard
here in Hollywood.
it's so hard here. Yeah. It's like, you know, I went to one Starbucks, they were out of the chai. Like, it's like,
oh my god,
all the way to Beverly and La Brea and rush hour traffic.
Wow.
I mean, it's hard, Tom. People don't understand.
Where do you
shoot?
We shoot Dancing at Television City, CBS.
Oh, that's where we do Talking Dead.
Yeah. Oh, you do that? Yeah. Which stage do you do?
And we're in Ferguson's old stage.
Oh, okay.
But when he was in the smaller stage.
And we did, of course, Hollywood Squares, like right downstairs from that building.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Down where the...
Yeah.
That is a great building.
The Bob Barker studio.
Yes.
Where they do Price is Right, where Drew does Price is Right. Now.
Well, when the one floor down from Talking Dead is where they do... It's Price is Right. And all these soap operas that I'm surprised are somehow still on the air.
One Life to be Restless.
Yes, One Life to be Restless and Young and Bold.
Young and bold. And
sort of young and restless because they're figuring out when the ball's going to drop.
How many are left?
I don't know. There can't be that many. I think there's just a couple.
Wow.
But what's really fun is going downstairs, and they just leave all that Price is Right shit out in the hallway.
Yeah.
You could just go spin the wheel if you want to.
Yep. Yeah,
I don't think you're supposed to, but I do it.
I took a Plinko game home.
I just want the little mountain climber.
Right. Yeah,
I want the little.
I had my Mustang convertible top down. What's he doing with that?
No,
big green 70s noir thing.
I'm Tom Bergeron. Shut the fuck up. Like, sorry, I got to meditate.
Yeah.
the wheel though was the.
I'm taking it home. All right.
Home. Fuck it. When you spin the wheel, the wheel's heavier than you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
The Price is Right wheel. And then, depressingly,
it's heavier than you think.
It is.
Really?
I, you know, yeah. And now I totally get why some, you know, like grannies don't get it all the way around once.
They stroke out.
And then they.
That's the last thing I remember seeing.
Let's give her the. Let's
Where's
give her
Drew the, looking down on me saying?
Give him the living room say.
That's right.
Give it to her. But it also. And I know how television works, and I still. Was surprised that when I spun the wheel, it just goes thud, 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 thud. And I actually found myself alone one day spinning the wheel and just going, boop, 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 like making the sound so that it would feel the way it feels.
I think that's when you know you need a vacation.
What is that?
Yeah.
Is that a...
I think that's the moment you go, I'm too into this.
This is maybe too much.
Yeah.
What do you do on your time off?
What do I do? Am I? It's kind of interesting because the way these shows are structured, I don't go to work every day now.
Right.
So I kind of, you know, sometimes I'm in Connecticut and sometimes we're out here. And what do I go to the gym? I find a Starbucks. I read the New York Times. We get together with friends. You know,
normal people stuff.
Normal people stuff. Yeah.
So you don't have like a wood shop or something, or you build motorcycles on the side.
I build motorcycles in my wood shop. And the sad thing
wood.
Is the there are a lot of fires.
But I'm gonna make it work.
Yeah, I think there's a future for wood motorcycles.
I don't know why you just made me think of like in the. It's funny to sort of look back at, you know, 100 years ago and just be like, yeah, look how dumb they were. They're sending kids into factories and working around all sorts of stuff that kill them. I mean, we do the same thing. We put cell phones to our heads and we drink
right,
plastic
exactly.
bottles. And it's like, we're just as fuck.
I put two Splendas in this. I'm sure I'm going to have a Splenda tumor in about 10 years. Look at that.
A Splenda baby.
Yeah.
But it's all those, you know, like... When you hear about this, like they just built everything they had to build out of wood.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, and then the Ringling Brothers would build this thing and then it would go up in flames and they'd build another 5-story building and then that would explode and they'd build another one.
Yeah.
Oh, the methane from all the animal poop did that. You know, like just thinking about
it's a wonder people ever left their home.
It's a wonder that we have survived as long as we have.
Yeah.
Even though we're, you know, just a blink of an eye in the history of the planet.
Meanwhile, bacteria is going, these people are persistent.
They're worse than we are.
Yeah, I know.
we can do this.
Yeah, right.
The bacteria is going to take us down. I imagine every generation probably has the same sort of like, well, we're fucked. But we.
Oh yeah. Well, there's a lot of reason to think that now. I look at my daughters in their 20s, and we talk sometimes about what their perspective of the world is, and I think part of it is because the world is smaller because of technology. Mm-hmm. So we know everything that's going. We know a lot about, you know, like the Ebola outbreak or ISIS or whatever it is. It's freaking you out.
It's happening in the moment.
It's happening in the moment.
Yeah.
So the world is a lot smaller now. So maybe that's part of it. It's not any more dangerous. It's just our brains are so much full of stuff.
Well, and most of the stuff is the news is, you know, I mean, to get your attention. I mean, obviously there are some things that we should all collectively know about.
Yeah.
Some of the things that you mentioned, but also when it starts to get like fringe fear tactics,
yeah,
where it's like just trying to get people to, you know, these news outlets are corporations and they want your attention, and they know if they scare the shit out of you, then they'll get your attention. So it just seems like where everything is horrible, but everything is not horrible.
It's the equivalent of, I don't know if this happens in other parts of the country, but in LA, of course, the moment somebody in a car takes off from police, all programming stops so that helicopters can show you the chase.
Right.
You know, and then you're looking at a screen of just one car. It's the old Bronco with OJ kind
of thing. I like to call that free-range NASCAR.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
Because it's the same sort of thing where it's like you're watching and your part of it is like, is he going to hit
something? I know.
You know?
Oh, he's coming up to it. And they go golf announcer on. He's coming up to an intersection now, and this will be a very difficult left turn.
He's made the conversion through the red lights.
Oh, look, the mother pushing the stroller is just past. Oh, good. Oh, that's good. That was close.
And here comes Bergeron, and he's trucking after, just angry, just ripping off his shirt.
That's right.
8-pack. Bergeron smash.
That's the same energy that, if you recall, back 30 years ago, took down a busload of relief workers.
Tom Bergeron,
does
an excellent
still
host
have the mojo?
Not to be reckoned with.
Yeah, that's right.
A force of nature. But it is. I guess part of the longevity thing is really just appreciating it when it's happening.
Yeah. Oh,
and
absolutely.
And just taking those moments to, you know, because I'm having a nice moment right now, but it's not going to be forever. So I'm just trying to be like, okay, no, this is the thing. This is the mm-hmm. thing. You just got to like just be grounded and try to appreciate it.
Yeah, because it does go fast. I mean, anything, I mean, whether it's, you know, you're talking about a career or a relationship or a life, it just, you know, suddenly I remember my late grandmother, she was 90. I think she was almost 93 when she died. And she, up until a few months before she died, she was still driving her own car, had her own apartment, drank a gin martini as big as her head every night. and I remember taking her out to dinner and saying, are you frightened of dying? She goes, no, not really. She said, but it goes fast. She said, it really went by fast. Thinking, wow, she's almost 93, and she's looking back at her life, and it's like, you know, like that. So it's good to get ginned up and appreciate it.
I guess my question is, Papa Tom, how do I not fuck this up?
Yeah.
that's a good. I mean, I guess also, you know, the older you get, your brain has only held on to so many details.
Yeah.
And so when you think about it, it's like, oh, that's all. I can think of that in a handful of moments that flick by like a like an iTunes library.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I did a book in 2009 called I'm Hosting as Fast as I Can. and it was a great discipline to try to connect those dots and make a narrative out of it. You know, part of it was also a book about meditation too, as a sort of a subplot or subtext. But also finding, you know, what did I remember? Number one, and I found I had to call a lot of people. Is this how you remember it? And then trying to string it together in a way that made some sort of narrative sense was a good discipline for me. I enjoyed it, though.
Are you going
to
be someone that you think will you want to be kind of like working for the rest of your life, or at a certain point you're going to be like, yeah, I'm good. I just want to like.
I've always admired what Carson did when he left.
He just dropped off the planet.
Bye bye.
Yep.
You know, I'll be at Wimbledon, and I'll be on my boat.
Yeah, and he, when you see those kind of pictures of him later in life, like he really just let it all
go. No, he kind of put on some weight. The last time he was on TV was he brought Letterman a top 10 list, I think, when Letterman was doing his show in L.A. And he came out, and he was still Johnny Carson, but he had popped, you know, maybe packed a few, like 20 pounds on. He was sort of the Falstaff version of Johnny Carson. You know, it was really kind of cool.
But he, you know, but you... Boy, he's a guy that I would really be interested for someone to do a deep dive into what. Because I
talked to Carl Reiner about Carson because, and I worked with Ed McMahon on a number of the Jerry Lewis telethons and things, and we'd go to dinner and I would always pick his brain about Carson. And Carl used to play poker with him. There was a great poker. It was like Carson, Carl, Chevy Chase sometimes,
Jesus,
Steve Martin. And they would, and Carl said Carson was pretty serious about the game and kind of shy and not, you know, but not very social outside of, you know, he owned that show. Certainly he commanded that stage, but he was not great with groups of people that he didn't know.
Yeah, it just feels like there was something real dark going on there.
Oh, and Carson would talk about alcohol not being his, you know, like he would turn. He would have, and McMahon told me that Johnny Carson could just have two drinks. It wouldn't take a lot. But suddenly, you know, McMahon would be pulling, especially when they did the show in New York before they moved out to Burbank. And they'd be out after the show, and McMahon would be basically his bodyguard taking him out of a bar.
Which, shit.
But yeah, he definitely had a dark side.
I mean, it's almost kind of a romantic ideal, even though it sounds really gritty and dirty, but just this idea that you could be one of the most famous people in the world and getting into shit, but because there's no social media and the press, it's like
absolutely.
You just get away with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Well, it was a whole look at JFK and his. Now we hear about all he was like banging Judith Wexler, who had connections to the mob and all this stuff. Nowadays, he just couldn't get away with it.
No. He'd take a selfie.
Right.
Of course. Yeah. It would get out.
Yeah. I mean, it was even Monica Lewinsky, it's almost quaint by comparison to what it's like now.
I remember the days when you could get a blowjob and a pizza in the Oval Office.
The only people you had to worry about spying on you were the Russians. It's like now the entire world is spying on everyone else. We're all just doing it ourselves.
Mikhail Gorbachev just saw you get that blowjob on Skype.
Oh my! Oh, don't tell Nancy. I don't know. I was just trying to keep it.
Well,
I didn't really understand how does this contraption work?
Peace with honor.
I think of Reagan as a non-evil Montgomery Burns.
Yeah,
or is this that sort of like he's just sort of like a dopey cousin?
Right.
To,
yeah. Oh,
well,
yeah,
I don't know. Garrett, you like a jelly bean,
Smithers? Well, this is fun. I think we're just about an hour, Tom Bergeron.
Wow.
What do you want to promote? You want to promote Dancing with the Stars?
Yes, Dancing with the Stars every Monday night on ABC and America's Funniest Videos. We're in our 25th season.
That's fucking crazy.
Sunday nights at 7.
My God.
On ABC.
On ABC.
On ABC.
On ABC.
Come on down.
That's right. There's a 1 week you got to host Dancing with the Stars like that. You have to do... What are you going to do for your last episode of either of those shows? Are you going to do something crazy, or do you feel like, I'll just let it sort of be...
Well, I think I'll take that producer up on her offered liquor for the last AFE.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this is another guy getting hit in the nuts. How many fucking times you have to see that? Jesus Christ. We're a cop, for Christ's sake.
I don't even... Oh, you shot!
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'll put you on a trampoline to hell.
And then the first episode of the next iteration of the show is that video of you freaking out.
Yeah, me in a straitjacket.
like chunks of vomit down.
Yeah, right. Being tasered by producers.
Get him out of here.
You can't take me down. I'm not human. Right. And Saget's going, I know, I've been there.
Saget's like, all right, I guess I'll just take my dick out. I don't know what else to do.
I'm going to do Full House again. Fuck it.
Are you on social media at all?
Yeah. Twitter, Tom _ Bergeron. And I'm verified.
Yeah, excellent.
But that's pretty much, and Instagram. Facebook, I kind of lost interest in that. Now, basically, my only Facebook presence is when my tweets go to the news feed or whatever.
Yeah, it goes over there.
But I like Twitter. I think Twitter's a great kind of fun way.
You on Instagram at all?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
Same. Is it Tom _ Bergeron?
No, it's just Tom Bergeron one. Word.
Good to know.
Yeah.
This has been fun.
I know.
Do you have any more good comedy power lunches coming up?
Having lunch tomorrow with Shatner.
What?
Yeah, that's always fun.
He's great.
That's always fun.
He was on the podcast, I don't know, maybe like 6 months ago or something.
He is like
great.
He is 83 going on like 30.
He looks amazing.
Yeah, he does. But beyond that, his passion for things, his energy. My wife and I went down to Louisville, Kentucky.
No, my
Lexington,
where I was born.
Lexington, oh, Kentucky.
Born.
Sorry.
Never mind.
Sorry.
Fuck Lexington.
One of those L cities to Lexington because they were, he and his wife were doing they were at a horse show and they were competing and all that. So I had hosted the 4th of July for PBS in Washington and we went down to Lexington after that and hung out for a couple of days with them. And it was Liz and my wife Lois were in our rental car, and I'm in a truck with Bill driving. And it was just surreal on some level. I'd look over there going, fucking Captain Kirk, Billy Crane. And yet he is such a fun guy. He's hilarious.
He's amazing.
And never dull. Never dull.
He's one of those guys where... Well, and I said this to him when he was on the show, and it was accidentally insulting. Where I was like, "Wow, I always used to really kind of freak out about getting older, but seeing you at this age, like it's so comforting to know that I could, you know, you really bring me a lot of comfort." And he was like, "Who's going to comfort me?" And I'm like,
"Yeah,
oh,
but he's good. He's really funny about it. I mean, he doesn't, he makes no pretense about it, but it really is. And again, Carl Reiner at 92."
Yeah,
Dick Van Dyke at 87. These people just give me great hope, and it's not so much about career achievements as attitude, just you've got to stay passionate about stuff.
Yeah,
Carl still gets up and writes every day. Dick is still doing movie appearances and things, and Bill's got 9 projects at once all the time.
Yeah,
and it's just about being getting up and wanting to learn something new or do something.
That's
else.
The key. Is you have to be learning constantly,
right. Yep.
And when you stop.
Yep.
When you start getting too protective of your, I don't have the energy for that. That's when you get old.
Yeah, you're old the day you say you are.
Yeah, because I had a conversation with a friend of mine last night about the Joan Rivers documentary, and he was like, actually, I thought it was kind of sad that she was her age and but still just so hungry. And I was like, but that's what kept her alive and relevant.
Yeah.
And Mel Brooks is the same way. That it's like. He's got a bunch of stuff going on too. He wants to learn. He's still hungry, and that's what you need. I think.
I thought that documentary. I gave her so much credit for that because she let warts and all in that thing. I mean, she could have said, "Okay, we're going to do a documentary, but it make me look good all the time," and she let that desire to be relevant. And one time when I was having dinner with Shatner, I said to him pretty much that same thing. I said, "Why do you still? You could just kind of." Be on cruise control now. And he says, I just want to be pertinent.
Yeah.
I thought, well, that's a great way to look at it. I just still want to be in the game.
Yeah. Even if, and at that point, when you're younger, I think it's more of an exercise.
Well, you're trying to build a career and, all
but it's
that.
Probably more of an exercise of ego when you're younger. But I think when you get older, it's an exercise of emotional survival. I think you have to.
Yeah.
Because, Johnny... I know he had emphysema. I think it was emphysema.
It was. That's what killed him.
But, he just kind of went downhill pretty fast.
Well, and, when he died, Letterman did his monologue. And after the monologue was done, told us, the audience, that all of those jokes had been written by Johnny Carson. Carson would write jokes and would send them to Letterman periodically. And from what I've heard, if Letterman used one of the jokes, Carson would call like Freddie DeCordova or somebody who was involved in his, you know, Peter LaSalle, whoever. Hey, he used one of my jokes today.
Aww.
So there was still that.
Something.
Yeah, something. But I for whatever reason, he didn't feel the need to get back into it.
I think my guess is that, without knowing anything about him, is that looking at someone who had two very distinct sides of them, this very public-facing side, particularly, which I think just really a product of the society at the time.
Sure.
It's like, there was this, you know, you can't let anyone in, this is the facade, and this is professional, and then home is different. The older you get, it must take an enormous amount of energy to keep that up.
Right.
But if you can still be yourself,
then
I think it's a little more seamless, you know, than having to, you know, like,
don the attire.
Yeah, the attire and have to pretend to like people.
Yeah. Attire has the word tired almost in it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on.
A pleasure. No, this is a pleasure.
Please come back. And I'd love to come to how many episodes of, where are you at in the season with Dancing with the Stars?
We're about halfway through. We just did week 5. We're going to be until the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. You're welcome anytime.
I should come. I should
know
bring
a
my
guy
mom.
Who can get you VIP tickets.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Who is it?
It's, you know.
What?
Mr. Meditator over here.
Tom, it's Chris. Chris who? Heinrich.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I was in a meditative state. I checked out for that whole.
Yeah.
Checked out for that whole thing. All right. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
I'm Shimol Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now I'm coming back as a judge and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, The Competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.